So we have this Sabbath, and the next Sabbath will be getting one more day closer, or one more week closer, and then we will have Shavuot. Okay? At that point in time, I will hope to have the complete outline established so you can and pass it out that I have made up for this. And then you can kind of go over, look at it again and reveal some things and see some things. Today, before I begin, technically this is still a manna week, right? It's still a part of taking something that God still has yet to dish out. So this is basically, in a sense, is still where we're receiving manna, or God, if we're walking contrary to what God wants us to do. And he says, oh, you want some quail too? So as we enter in the next two chapters, I'm going to have a work on only the 17th chapter today. The 18th chapter, which is out of sequence to in timing, I will talk about that next week, the 18th chapter, and you'll understand it's out of sequence for a reason and for a purpose. It's not part of the going to the journey. This is the 18th chapter of Exodus tells you what has happened well after they had received already the Ten Commandments. I'll get you there and I'll prove that to you. But I can tell, look at how it's written and you know. All right? But before we begin, what are some of the things you have learned or understood from what I've said so far? When did our journey begin? The events began on Passover, and that's correct. So now, when the 14th day, they killed the lamb in the afternoon, right? And they ate it that evening, and they were left out in ranks, orderly process, remember? They didn't run like scared rabbits. They ran in an orderly conduct in ranks of five. All the house of Israel, it was all in ranks of five. They left out with what kind of hand? They were not afraid at all. They didn't have to run for their lives at all. Then what happened when they finally reached? They reached a place called Sukkot. What was the thing they had to do there at Sukkot? The what?
That was their first camp.
First camp. What were they required to do on that day? They had to count something. They had to do something. What were they supposed to do? The firstborn. They had to get the firstborn and count the firstborn. How many of the firstborn? Had that be done first on the 15th day, which we call the first day of unleavened bread. But on that day, a very important thing took place. And it's kind of like unimportant to our world. But no, it really is very important that we remember the firstborn was to be picked that day. And it's a beginning of the harvest. What's that word for Hebrew for harvest? Chazir. Chazir. All right? That's the word for harvest. It's chazir. So they're already starting to, and God showing us, now we're getting to pick. You're bringing in the harvest, starting bringing the harvest. Now, I used an example that God pulled all of Israel out of Egypt as if it was his harvest. I told you there's a parallel between this story and the one that's going to happen in the future. What was the step that's going to happen in the future? Remember, the by planted seed, wheat into his field, and what came up? Someone else came in and planted what? And he said, don't take them. Wait until the tares grow bigger, and then take and kill the tares, and then bring in Machazir. Okay? And so we have a future prophecy that through the Messiah, and we see this prophecy, he's talking about a harvest, and lo and behold, when he plants his harvest, up it comes, an enemy comes and puts in the tares. All right? and have to wait until the time to kill the tares before you could bring in the harvest. And what happened to ancient Egypt? The tares were killed. Firstborn of the tares were killed. It's an awful lot. Think of that? As we move on from day to day, we find out that on the last day of unleavened bread, what took place? It was a big, 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 huge event. Everybody knows about it. Yes. The Red Sea. Crossing over the Red Sea. So you've got to get a memory of all these things that takes place. You know? Just a brief memory. Okay? Now, we'll just move up here a little bit sooner. We're now at a point in time where there was a bitter waters. And God sent them on that journey. What I've been trying to show you, this is not the actions of people. This is the actions of God. What God does, why He's doing it. And if we can see and understand His actions, His thinking, His motive, then we can learn an awful lot from Him. And then we're at this point where this day represents one of the days that some of the Israelites decided, no, we're going to go out and get manna anyway. It wasn't there. Was it? And the manna stunk, right? They kept it. It stunk. Except, of course, on the sixth day, it didn't. They could get twice as many. They're only supposed to take a bowl of Omar per person in their household. They were not supposed to take any more than that. Now we're at a point. I want to move you into the 17th chapter of Leviticus. The 17th chapter of Exodus. So I need a reader.
Then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, and encamped in Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people contended with Moses and said, "Give us water, that we may drink." So Moses said to them, "Why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water. And the people complained against Moses and said, "Why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and the water shall come out of it, that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the contention of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, "Choose us some men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses said to him, and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became weary. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people and with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this for a memorial in the book, and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven." And Moses built an altar and called its name, "The Lord is my banner." For he said, because the Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation.
Does anything seem out of sequence? Man, there's something out of sequence in the 16th chapter. Remember the latter part of the 16th chapter? Something was out of sequence. What was it? How could they put the manna in the ark when there was no ark? Okay, the same thing here. Moses did not build an altar at this point. The altar not to be built until after they have received what they were supposed to receive from God after Mount Sinai. So now we look at these, say, don't look at that. Not necessary chronological order. This is, okay, this is the point. Talk about the manna. Oh, yes, we knew we do the manna. We put some over here in the future. Well, not in the future. And it says that Aaron put it in the testimony. He can't put it there because it didn't exist yet. So we know that's written after the mountain event. All right. Now, the same thing here in the very ending here, there was something there that Moses had to do. He had to build an altar. Well, altars were not built until afterwards. Now we have to find out why is it here. Okay? So, with that, we will look into it a little bit later. What is it you see here in the 17th chapter? What is it you noticed? What is it you understand? It was the third time that they tempted God. What else did you kind of notice? What's the story?
Moses was in the holding up of Moses' hands in the middle of the field or the mountain there to bring about the victory.
All right. Two very unusual things stands out and should shout at you. All right. One is that rock being struck. And the second thing to stand out to you is a war? They had a war before the Ten Commandments? Why didn't God just stop it? Why didn't He destroyed the Israelites, the Egyptians? How come He didn't just say, hey, kill them all and forget about this thing? Why did he? Now he said, oh, God didn't know it. He had no idea. God never had the slightest idea. Oh, yes, he did. He brought war to them. They had to go to war before they received the Ten Commandments. Isn't that odd? Don't you say, huh? How come? Was this just a happenstance thing that was unexpected? Well, let's be careful as we read. Because it's a very interesting place. Now, this technically is taking place quick, in a sense, next week. All right? But people are moving, and they're moving, going to move to this place. And what's the name of the place? Rephidim. Rephidim. That's a plural word. Now, why there? Well, you know, they rested there, they stayed there, and they said, and there was no water to drink. And so, what did the people do? Oh, Moses, we don't have any water. Could you ask God to give us water? Did they ask that? There it is, stone him. Moses was not a hero to them. Moses was not the most important man in their world. Moses, the person that brought them, for them to die in this wilderness, in a place where there's no water, the cattle or all the sheep and the goats and everything else they have, they're going to die. There's no water. The children are going to die. There's no water. They're going to die. There's no water. And they're going to stone Moses. Wow, you say, wait a minute. Don't they forget what took place back there in Egypt? What did they see? They saw a man do tremendous amount of destruction. They didn't see God. They saw Moses. They saw Aaron. They saw those people doing it. And it was not always good news. In fact, when you go through this journey, if you've been gone through the journey with us, with them, then you see them murmuring and complaining. Upset. They didn't get what they wanted. They didn't get to eat what they get to eat. Down comes this stuff. What is it? Well, whatever it is, you're going to eat it the rest of your life. Well, for a lot of them, it was the rest of their life. And now we're at this point where this man, who should be the most dynamic Israelite you could imagine, that his rod separated in the water. Wow! His rod turned into a snake and ate a bunch of snakes. Wow! This guy has almost what appears to be unlimited power, right? Brings forth the frogs, brings forth the insect, brings forth the blood. He does all that stuff. Wouldn't you think if you ever met him and that person, you were there standing there, you'd say, oh, that's Moses. I don't want to mess with him. But what are they going to do? They're going to kill him. They're going to stone me. He cried out to God, what am I going to do with these people? They're going to kill me. Oh. Now God says, okay, what did you tell Moses to do? Verse 5. And Yahuwah said unto Moses, go before the people and take with thee the elders of Israel who are ready to stone you to death, kill you, and thy rod, wherein thou smote the river, take with thy hand and go. Behold, I'll stand before thee upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite that rock, and thou shalt come forth water out of it, and the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. Wow. You're going to stone this guy? Look, this, I heard, you probably have taught too, your History Channel does all this to you, Discovery Channel does the same thing. They come along here and they say, what, it really was sandstone. You mean our Messiah is made of sand? Or was it made out of really solid rock? And it got broken. It got broken. Wow.
When God says, I will stand before thee, do you think he looked like a pillar of fire or a cloud or something?
It would have been the cloud.
The cloud.
Now we're talking Yahuwah standing on top of that rock. I don't know. We can't see him. Can't touch him. Can't feel him. And out comes this rod. It must have been a pretty good diameter rod, to tell you the truth. My thinking. Man, he struck that rock. And it split. And out comes living waters for them to drink. Now, is that a parallel to anything in the New Testament? And that rock was always with them. But that rock had to be split. That rock had to no longer be a rock. It had to die. Before the Ten Commandments. That's a pretty big picture, don't you think? I mean, we're talking about Moses, a man, got this rod and just struck that rock. Phew, out comes water all over the place. Wow. And those Israelite leaders were going to stone this man to death. Would you stand up there and say, wow, maybe I should give a second thought here? Yes.
It just occurred to me that were the Ten Commandments given, what, about 50 days later or so? Or?
No. Just right around the corner.
Just around the corner.
We're very close to the Tenth Commandment.
I was just wondering if there was a parallel, you know, right there when the rivers, the water came out, and then the Ten Commandments, you know.
The Ten Commandments follow thereafter.
But not about 50 days.
Where they are camped right now, The next movement is to Mount Sinai. What does Sinai mean? Thorny. Okay. That's what the word means. It's a very cool word that we learned the word. But today I want to teach you another word. I want to show you another word. I want you to look at another word because it's very, very important. Moses had said two things here when he struck that rock. He used two names. He would have turned around and he would have told those elders, and he called the name of the place Massa and Meribah. Because of the old English here, the chiding, and because the tempting to Yahuwah. Two things were occurring there. Two things they did. Now, what did he call? Did he call that rock that? Did he call a rock that was split down? Down it came? He's got this rock and that rock. Rock split in half. One of them was quarreling with God, siding with God, and the other one was tempting God. Ooh. You ever think about that? Yeah, we know about the rock. We know it got split. Moses was ready to be killed. They were going to kill him. And God said, go ahead, go before, leave the people here at what place? Rephaim. Rephidim, and leave them there, and you take the elders with you, and I'll be there, and you strike that rock. Now, ask yourself a question. If you're a flesh and blood human being, and you saw this guy with a rod in his hand, and he hit the stone, and it split in two, what if he decided to hit your head? Would you feel a bit afraid? Like a police officer got a billy club, bam, you got your head split open. Moses was so powerful, so strong, he split a rock. You have to be there with those Israelite leaders who were going to stone this man to death, and their mouth had to have been dropped wide open. They would have had to have, beginning to have, fear of Moses. Not respect, fear. As God said, yeah, I'll give them to them. This is what you're going to do. They are striving against me and they're contention against me. And long as they keep it up, they're challenging me. And guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring a war to them. I'm going to bring the enemy now. And I'm going to have that enemy fight. So what, they want to strife with me? They want to strife, oh, bring in the enemy. And what was the name of the enemy? Amalek. Who's Amalek? The great-grandson of one of Esau's sons. It wasn't a happenstance that the early Amalek says, oh, let's go after them. And God says, what are you doing? What are you doing? No. God was mad at the Israelites because they just did something to him. You are striding against me. You're fighting against me. You're not going to get away with that. You want a war? I'll give you one. And here it comes. Another unusual? Or do you kind of think that maybe this story about the rock being split, it's kind of like, oh, that's one story. And the next story is about, okay, they went to war. My. Or do you think maybe God is involved? So far, he's been involved in every incident in their life, right? Well, let's say before the first plague. He's involved in life way back, you know, the burning bush that never burnt up. And Moses was so terrified of God. Let me ask you a question. There are two kinds of fears. One that's so frightening, you will get out of the way. Like a Mack truck coming at you. Get out of the road. Then there's another fear that frightens you so much, you're terrified to move. That's the one God uses. doesn't need the other one. He uses that one. So he brought an army. A really, not a very pleasant army. Verse 9. And Moses said to Joshua, choose out men and go out and fight Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the what? Rod of Elohim. All that time, I thought it was Moses' rod. No. What happened to Moses' rod? Most, the very first thing that took place with Moses' rod, it would turn into a snake. How was Moses supposed to pick up that snake? And everybody does the snakes. You say, never do that. Get the head first. Oh, no. God said, get the tail. Pick it up by the tail. You have full and total control of the snake. God put power, in a sense, in that rod of Moses. And he changed its dynamics. All right. My only thing I had to say is, wow, what a rod. They could split a rock in two. Wow, what a rod. Now, we've come into another word. Very fascinating word. And that's the name of the place they were encamped at. Unusual word. Remember I told you the plurality? Unusual word. You try to look it up, and it probably is, you know, it's just very funny things. It says, Raphidim means rest, plural, stays, plural, resting places, plural. Oh, okay, I guess they stayed there. They rested there. Now let's go back to Old English, 1611 English. Because that's where we miss out on. That's a plurality of the word. Now I'm going to show you the singular word. And it's nothing more than Raphidah. There's Raphidim, then Raphidah. What is a Raphidah? I want you to turn to the Book of Songs. Song of Solomon. Because when you look at 1611 English, and they translated it, they translated mean a different word than what you think it means. And when you find out what that means, and they say, oh, now I understand why they use the plurality here. It tells us something. I saw Book of Song, third chapter. And verse 9. I want everybody to turn there. They've got to turn there. Because I'm going to treat it what it says in Old English. I want to find out what some of the other translators have it. Okay? I think it's fascinating. But it helps me to teach you something of what the meaning means. Book of Psalms, third chapter, starting in verse 9. Song of Solomon, the third chapter. Songs of Solomon, the songs of Solomon, the song. What other name is it called by? Songs of Solomon, or is it Songs? Songs of Solomon, okay. That's what I thought it was, but you know, I got Old English, you know. Maybe the new stuff got a new name in it, I don't know. Are we all there? Not yet. Very important, because I want to describe something to you, that we may be able to understand something. And I'll explain to you, hopefully, a very important thing. Verse 9. King Solomon made himself a chariot of wood from Lebanon. Now, the 10th chapter, 10th verse, starts describing it. He made the pillars thereof of silver. Meaning a chariot has pillars.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom thereof, gold.
Really?
And the covering of it with purple. It's purple material. And the midst thereof paved the day for the love of the daughters of Jerusalem. What is it saying? Does anybody else have another translation of verse 10? Would you place the
verse 10?
Just the verse 10.
He made its, that's pretty similar, I guess. He made its post of silver, its back of gold, and its seat of purple fabric, with its interior lovingly fitted out by the daughters of Jerusalem. What is different, it was in 9, was King Solomon has made for himself a sedan chair from the material of Lebanon.
Right. Now, my question to you is this. Anybody else has any other translation of the verse 10?
Same as Hector said, actually, but right at the end it says, its interior was inlaid with love. Daughters of Jerusalem come out.
Right.
And there's an asterisk in love. It says Hebrew uncertain. So,
yeah. I always say uncertain because they don't understand it. How many of you have the word bottom of gold? 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, wait a minute. Chariots made out of what? The chariot made out of what?
Wood.
And what does it mean by the bottom? See, it's a wrong word there in your old English. In English, that word, rafada, means railing. Oh, what's a railing? I have a chariot here, got a horse in front, got two wheels, got an axle. I'm standing on something called the platform, more likely it's wood, and I got things standing up, they're pillars, and there's something that's on the pillar. It's a rail. When you make a chariot, the top of his railing was made out of gold. You couldn't have the bottom made out of gold, because how many horses would you have to pull the thing? The wheels would collapse under that weight. So now, to understand this, we'll get deeper into the scene to understand what we're talking about. We're talking 1611 English because it helps to understand 1611 English, because 1611 English translated as banister. They don't translate it as a place to rest. They translate it as banister. Now, what's a banister? Yeah, something you hang on to. I walk up a flight of stairs. If it's against the wall, there's no pillars holding up. If I'm walking a flight of stairs and there's no wall, something's holding up the railing, the banister. Oh, it's these posts. They're called pillars. Pillar, we have a term in our English. We picture them as big, huge, giant thing. No, it's just a pole. Those poles are made out of silver. And they held up the railing. The banister, 1611 English. Why you don't have it translated in your new translations? Well, I don't know. It's kind of silly, but it's not there. Now, with that in mind, let's go back to Exodus. And they stayed at a place called what? Rafidim. Now, okay. Staying. A railing. What railing was there? What railing? And Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him that he may sit thereon. And Aaron and Hur,
stayed up. Old English, stayed up his hands, the one with one side and the other side, and his hands were steady. Oh, something was holding them up. These guys were the pillars, I use that word. They were the stays. They were the stays that held up the banister, Moses' hands, that they became steady. Have you ever walked a flight of stairs that's got a bunch of railings, got a post there, and it's railing's kind of wobbly? What do you do? Close the railing. It'll fall off. So the name of this place wasn't a territory. It was what the two men were doing. They were holding up Moses' arms during the battle, and the battle lasted for only one day. One day. So you learn a new word. So when you ever go to this point, and we're not yet there at the Mount of Thorny yet, are we? We left the wilderness of Thorn, and we're heading for the Mountain of Thorny. Kind of prickly. Something's going on here, right? You see, the words are very important, and I try to teach you words, because words, I think, helps you to get a better picture of what really is going on. Otherwise, we just read a story, we try to figure it out, but the names, the words, the things tells us actions, deeds, functions. What's going on? Now, Kur, his grandson, Kur was a Jew, his grandson, God blessed him. He's the one that God blessed, his grandson, to have great skills in making all of the beautiful things of gold and silver that was for the tabernacle. His grandson got a reward. And his son was the one that helped make the curtains. Because of what this man did. Isn't that neat? To know those little things about these, about Kur. That's how you pronounce his name as Kur. Not Kur, it's but Kur. That's his name. I tried to find a meaning of his name and it didn't show up quite well. And I said, well, it's not that important anyway. Okay. So I have here a picture. But I'm going to go to verse 13 because, you know, this is old English. I love old English words. I know, you like to live in the modern 21st century. That's okay. I like old English words. That's a very funny word. Very, very funny phrase to me. It says that Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people in the eye with the edge of the sword. Discomfited. It's a funny word. Oh, it made him uncomfortable. Now, 1611 English, that word doesn't mean being made uncomfortable or unpleasant. 1611 English, I'm only teaching this because I think it's funny, is to make confusion, to frustrate the plans, to inerp the competence of the task. Well, that's a pretty big word now, isn't it? 611, that's what the word meant today. It doesn't mean anything. You know, we've been estimating on it. I don't know what some of your translations have that for that word, but I love the old English because, I just told me things too like crazy. He didn't just, you know, make a discussion. He just upset the entire plan with a sword. Are we learning something today? I hope so.
What's the name of the place? A place where the stays, who was Aaron and Hur, held up the hands. And in those hands was the rod of Elohim. And they made him steady, firm, wouldn't move. And all the way until it was sunset. And Joshua beat him up. Now, if you were one of the elders, obviously it wasn't Joshua and it wasn't Hur. If you're one of the elders that was, that day, was going to, or the day before, was going to kill Moses with stones, and now you're fighting. You're at war with Amalek. And Amalek wins every time Moses gets tired. Oh, wow. Then when they held up his arms. Hey, Amalek got tired. He lost the battle. He lost it. So God's in control of the battle, control of the war. All before they go to the mountain of Thorny. Learn anything today? I know this may be taking a long time getting on these days. Then we're going to take you on a trip. And the trip is the journey to the ten. That all this story we're going into, maybe it's a long journey. I mean, we've got all these weeks on the very same story. But in these stories, you'll see the hand of God doing something every single time. The book of Numbers rattles off all of the places where they stayed. Exodus just rattles off the places where God is directly doing something on that particular campsite. And he spells it out for us to look back, for us to learn, for us to see how God's doing it and what he's going to give them on the day of Shavuot. Shavuot's a big, big picture, by the way. There's three big, giant events that take place.